This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
In this special edition, I'm joined by Erica Salmon-Byrne to discuss the World's Most Ethical Companies Awards for 2024, including the Ethics Premium. First, a word from the sponsor of the Compliance Podcast Network for March, Ethico.
In a world where compliance often hinges on anonymous reports, Ethico stands apart with the lowest industry anonymous rate. We believe in building connections, understanding each report's context, and in creating an environment where every voice is valued. Our approach is not just about collecting data. It's about fostering a culture where transparency and trust lead to more effective compliance. See the difference at ethico.com/CPN. Book a demo and use our free ROI calculator to transform how you handle anonymous reports. You can also download our white paper by Tom Fox, The ROI of Compliance. It's time to turn anonymity into a strength and not a barrier in your compliance efforts. Join us in shaping a future where every concern is addressed with the care and attention it deserves.
If you're interested in a quick compliance tip of the day, check out my newest podcast entitled Compliance Tip of the Day on the Compliance Podcast Network. Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox, back again with one of my dearest colleagues in compliance, Erica Salmon-Byrne. Erica, first of all, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Tom. It is my annual treat that I get to come on and talk with you at this time of year every year.
So this year, today, in fact, we're recording this on March 4, the public announcement of the World's Most Ethical Company Awards and the five-year ethics premium average was announced. So I wanted to start off by asking you at a high level, could you summarize what you guys announced today?
Absolutely. Yeah. So today's March 4th when Tom and I are recording this particular episode. And today was the launch of the World's Most Ethical Companies list. We announced the recognition of 136 companies this year across 20 countries and 44 industries. It's a big annual day for us every year when we get to shine a light on companies that are doing such good work in the world.
And what did the ethics premium show this year?
Yeah. So the ethics premium, Tom, is my favorite piece of data and your favorite piece of data, which is the calculation that we run every year when we announce the list. And it is a look back over a five-year period in terms of the calculation of the financial performance of the publicly traded companies on the list. In other words, we decide on the list in January, we look at the public companies on the list, and then we work with our indexing partners to say, if we pulled together a bucket of stocks that were the publicly traded companies on the list, and this year it's 69% of the list is publicly traded, what would that bucket of stocks have done over the course of the past 5 years compared to a comparable index? And every year since we have done this work, it has outperformed. This year, the outperformance was 12.3%.
So, Erica, could we go through some of the key highlights of the World's Most Ethical Company winners this year? So this, first of all, I want to start by saying this is the 18th annual recognition. Mm-hmm. What did you see from the companies who received this designation in 2024?
Yeah, it is the 18th year, Tom, as you said. So we've been doing this every year like clockwork since 2006. And we saw a couple of things. First, I want to start with some pretty significant changes that we made to this year's methodology. This year, for the first time, third-party management is 5% of your score. So we actually pulled third-party management out of the compliance and ethics portion of the analysis. We gave it its own weighting. And we did that because of what we have seen over the course of the last couple of years on how seriously companies are looking at how they interface with their third parties, the kinds of activities that they can support their third parties in, all of those pieces that really give you as an organization a chance to make sure that you are selecting partners that share your values. So that is now 5% of the score. It's a standalone category. And that gave us a chance to also expand that category of questions, which was terrific. So we got to ask about things like, to what extent are you offering training to key third parties who may not have as strong a compliance program as you would like? How often are you redoing your diligence? Things along those lines. So we made that change. We added weight to the governance section, which was another change this year, and gave us a chance to look at things like how many boards are your directors sitting on, right? Tom, you and I have talked about the incredibly important role that a director plays in overseeing an organization and how important it is that they have the time to be able to do that thoroughly and effectively and in fulfillment of their fiduciary responsibilities to stakeholders. One of the trends we've seen over the course of the last couple of years is the decrease in the number of boards, other boards that the directors at World's Most Ethical Companies are sitting on, right? So the overboarding, which has been a big topic of conversation in the governance ecosystem, we're seeing less of that than we were seeing a couple of years ago. We're seeing 20% of the score is culture, and we're seeing a real lean in for companies trying to figure out how are employees feeling, right? Where are my hotspots? Where are the places where I've got a hybrid workforce where some employers are being treated better than others? All of those things that we learned in the pandemic about how to keep a workforce cohesive and engaged across a different ways of working, that's all showing up now in the data, which is really exciting to us.
I'd like to go through some of the companies, actually, in terms of a higher level view. It's not simply U.S. companies, and it's not concentrated in one area. So could you maybe talk us through the geographic dispersion of companies who receive the designation, and also what?
Yeah, so this year we recognize companies across 20 countries. So we have representation from Europe. We have representation from the U.S., from Latin America, from Canada, from Asia. Right, so real global disbursement of the companies that we recognize this year. They are more larger organizations than not, right? So if you look at the companies on the list, we have about 13% of the list that has less than $500 million in revenue. We have about 18% of the list that has less than 5,000 employees. And then we have companies on the list that are much, much larger, right? Some of the largest, you know, brands in the world as well. So real spread as far as headcount size, revenue size. We have PE-backed companies, we have privately held companies, we have nonprofits, and we have publicly traded companies on the list. And we're across 44 industries at this point. So real broad in terms of where the organizations that we recognize this year have come from.
Erica, for our listeners, if they've not heard us together before, we actually have a trilogy of podcasts, or we try to, each year around the World's Most Ethical Companies designation. Mm-hmm. And it starts with the application process when it begins. Then we try to do something sort of November-ish around the benefits of simply applying. Mm-hmm. And it's a long-winded way of saying, I see this as a process.
Yeah.
And in many ways, I see the application process as important as any other part, although we're celebrating one of the most important parts today. So I was wondering if we might be able to talk through the process that a company goes through, what Ethisphere does to evaluate that, and really the value in this entire journey, because I really see it as a huge value for the greater compliance community.
Yeah, Tom, it would be my pleasure to walk you through it. So the first part of the process every year actually starts inside of Ethisphere, and that's a process that we kicked off last week. So you might say to yourself, wait a second, they're announcing it today and they've already kicked off next year's process? And the answer to that is yes. So last week we started updating the ethics quotient. So for your listeners who aren't as familiar with the process we do every year, it starts with what we call the ethics quotient, and that's the survey-based, data-driven way that we collect programmatic practices. So this year, the ethics quotient was 240 questions, because as I mentioned, we expanded third-party management, we added some questions to governance. We every year sit down as a team here with our various partners that we partner with on different topics, and we say, okay, what did we get right? What did we get wrong? Where can we make a question even more clear than we did last year? Are we getting a little bit too into our own phrasing of things? Can we clarify questions? And we start the process of redlining the EQ. And then starting in July, we will open the process for 2025. And so the first thing that any company that's interested in applying is going to do is they're going to download the annotated EQ. And I cannot emphasize this one enough, because the annotated ethics quotient shows you exactly what we changed from last year. And I have so many compliance professionals who will say to me, Erica, the fact that you guys released the red line is the biggest service you could give to the compliance community, because I just take that, I read your red lines, and I go and work on those things, because this is all you guys do. It's what you've done for 18 years. And so if Ethisphere is telling me to care about something, I'm going to take it pretty seriously, and I'm going to go try to figure out what my answer is. And that is free to anybody, right? You can go to our website today and you can download the annotated EQ for 2024. You can take a look at what we changed from the prior year, and you can think to yourself, why might they have changed that? And is that some guidance that I ought to take seriously myself? Companies that are interested in applying will then fill out the EQ. We then ask for supplemental documentation, right? So we're going to look at the documentation that you submit to us. Tom, this year, for the first time, I was really proud of the team for figuring this out. We actually released to applicants how we graded their docs. They'd get not just the scorecard that shows them how they performed on each of the categories. We also released to them the maturity scores that we assigned to their documentation. So they know exactly what the team thought of the documentation they submitted. And that gives them some guidance of some places that they might want to focus if those document scores were not where they otherwise wanted them to be. The companies take the EQ, they submit the documentation. We close the survey. We spend a couple of months as a team combing through the documentation, combing through the survey responses, matching documentation to survey answers, right? Really trying to dig in and make sure that we understand the organizations that we're reviewing. And then we use those finalized scores to select the list every year. Anybody who applies gets a scorecard, as I said. And then, as I said, this year, those documentation scores, which was, that was a big deal for us to figure out how to do that.
So the process itself, and you've said this before, it's not an easy process. You have to work at it. But the value in, whether you're a CCO or a compliance professional, in going through that process, it is some part a self-evaluation, but they're turning it over to Ethisphere for an outside evaluation. So we're not doing what we normally do, which is stare at our navel. We're getting someone else to look at it. Could you talk a little bit about the Ethisphere side of the evaluation?
Yes. Once the application process closes, we sit down as a team and we assign reviewers by industry. So what we try, one of the things we try to do is we try to look at every applicant in the context of their peers, because a manufacturing company is not going to be the same thing as a tech company, right? They're going to have different risks. They're going to have different programs. They have different workforces. So we assign reviewers by industry, and then those review teams take those applications and they start to work their way through them. So they look at the survey answers. They look at the submitted documentation. We do a tremendous amount, Tom, on our side, to look at reputational risks. So we read 10Ks, we read 10Qs, we comb through data sets, databases to look for particular reputational challenges that a company might be facing, something that would cause them to not be eligible to participate in the process in any given year. And then at the end of the process, and it takes, you know, that's basically runs from the end of October through the middle of January. So we ruin our holidays every year doing this. And then we sit down as a team and we collectively come up with the companies that we believe are deserving of the recognition in that particular year.
All right, let's see. I really can't say enough about this process. I know you and I have talked about this multiple times over the years. If you have never gone through the process, I would urge you to do. It is a great exercise. You get great feedback from Ethisphere, and you can use it to test yourself and see where your program is going forward.
Yeah, for sure. Tom, can I share one example of the way that annotated EQ has changed over time?
Sure.
So 4 years ago, for the first time, we added a specific question to the compliance and ethics program piece, asking about whether the compliance team participated in M&A due diligence. So 4 years ago, so that would have been the 2019-2020 edition of the EQ. The DOJ then added that to its ECCP guidance, specifically talking about the importance of the ethics and compliance team in M&A. And over the course of the last 4 years, we have seen the number of companies saying not just that the compliance team gives the diligence team a checklist, but that the compliance team actually has a dedicated member of its team as part of the M&A diligence team. We have seen that number go from 38% to this year, 90%. So if that's not a demonstration of the expansion of the compliance and ethics team's responsibilities and their importance inside of an organization, I can't think of a better example.
Erica, I'd now like to spend some time going through the five-year ethics premium. This year it's listed at 12.3. Could you walk us through this number?
Yeah, absolutely. So quick refresher, Tom, for anybody listening along right now that doesn't know how we calculate the ethics premium. So we take the publicly traded companies on the list. We look at their performance back five years, right? So we start the day that we start before the public announcement. So this is during the quiet period. And we work with an index partner to do a five-year look back. They compare the performance of those publicly traded companies, weighted, by the way. So there's no one company that's worth more than 8% of the index. So it's not like we just have one great company on the list that is carrying everybody else. It's all weighted. They compare it to a comparable index every year of companies, roughly the same industrial makeup, roughly the same country spread. And what we saw this year was a 12.3% outperformance. And the thing I want to emphasize, Tom, for anybody listening along is I'm not saying we have causation. It's not that just being on the world's most ethical companies list means that you are going to outperform. What instead I will say is we have 10 years of correlation and we have 10 years worth of data to say that the kinds of practices that wind you, that land you on the world's most ethical companies list, those practices are very closely correlated to better financial performance. And so for everybody who's out there thinking like, I have to defend my program, we're open to budget cuts, we're just a cost center, you are a value creator. The kind of work you do creates financial value for your organization. And we have the data to show it, right? So I strongly encourage your listeners to take a look at everything we've written about the ethics premium. I pin the correlation on a couple of factors. One is culture, right? So if you think about the weighting of the evaluation process, 20% of the score goes to how you are measuring and acting upon the measurement of your culture. And we all know that companies with good, strong cultures, the employees stay, right? You have engaged employees. You don't have the cost of turnover. I pin it on the fact that if you look at the average makeup of a company's value today, it's about 80% is intangible assets. What's one of your biggest intangible assets? Your people, right? What's one of your other biggest intangible assets? Your intellectual property and your trade secrets. Happy people protect trade secrets. That piece of the intangible assets plus the culture is one piece of that correlation. And then the other piece is the kinds of companies that wind up on our list tend to not have giant fines. And we all know that there's no P&L for the giant fine bucket, right? That's not a fund of money that companies have sitting somewhere. When they get fined, that money comes out of doing other things. That money comes out of R&D. That money comes out of hiring. And so those are some of the factors that I think go into that decades worth of outperformance.
That last point is not something I've heard discussed in compliance, which is the money has to go to a fine. It's obviously going to come from somewhere. So that's a great point. Erica, I typically say, and I've tried to say for years, that more effective compliance equates to greater business efficiency, which mm-hmm. equates to greater profitability. Would that be consistent with the finding of the ethics premium?
Yeah, absolutely, Tom, 100%. And the only thing that I would layer on top of that explanation, which I think is spot on, is a speak up culture doesn't end at the ethics and compliance program, right? A speak up culture is one where your employees feel comfortable bringing up a new product idea. They feel comfortable talking about a client challenge. They feel comfortable telling you that they think there's a risk in a specific place. And so if you spend the time to invest in the building those kinds of cultures and the kinds of managers who are open to being challenged in meetings with new ideas and new thoughts, the financial benefits of that are tangible, and we see that in the premium.
Erica, unfortunately, we are near the end of our time for this episode. But before we leave, I wanted to ask you where our audience can go to find out more about the 2024 World's Most Ethical Companies and the 2024 Ethics Premium.
Yeah, so they can go to worldsmostethicalcompanies.com, all, you know, one great big mashup of words, one right after the other, worldsmostethicalcompanies.com. And there you'll find a couple of things. You'll find this year's list. You'll find this year's ethics premium, and you'll find information on how to apply for next year if you decide that you're ready to take that step. I encourage you all to check it out. And then, of course, here at Ethisphere, we'll be writing and posting on LinkedIn for the next couple of months, sharing some of the data that we saw in the process, some of the things that we think are particularly interesting and important for our audience to know.
Well, Erica, I wanted to thank you again for taking the time to visit with me. And once again, shout out to Ethisphere for this really noble service for the compliance professional. I look forward to continuing this conversation.
Great. Tom, thank you so much for having me back. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you about this. Is one of my favorite days of the year every year. It's nice to spend it with you.
This is Tom Fox again. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the FCPA Compliance Report. As I mentioned at the start of this podcast network is sponsored by Ethico for the month of March. I have paired with Ethico to help you with the ROI of your compliance program. I've written a white paper which details some of the calculations you can go through to determine ROI, and Ethico has put together a ROI calculator. We've linked to the site on our show notes, so check out if you're interested in determining the ROI of your compliance program. The award-winning FCPA Compliance Report is the longest-running podcast in compliance. Thanks for visiting with us, and I hope to visit with you again next week.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.